Welcome back to episode 185 of Tall Boy Radio. Who knows where it's going to go tonight? We'll find out shortly. Don't you worry about that. We have a plan, but we so very rarely stick to it. Before I introduce you to our guest tonight, I'm going to introduce you to the one host who has made it tonight. So, Dave, did you want to say hello on behalf of the Over 50 Club?
Well, I think Adam's alluding to two out of the three of us are now in the second half of our century. Welcome all. I got here just about with a slight diversion via a washing machine and extension cable.
These problems that we have. So tonight, as I said, we are joined by a guest, and our guest tonight is someone who knows a little bit about charity and a little bit about giving, and she's going to talk to us tonight about her project. And did you want to say hello, Anisha?
Hi, I'm Anisha. I'm from unhoused.org. I'm sure we're going to cover exactly what unhoused.org is and what we do through this very, very exciting podcast, which I'm really looking forward to.
That's good. That's good to hear. So, yeah. So, as we said, so unhoused. So, the key there is in the title. And obviously, when we talk about the unhoused community, you can call them rough sleepers, you can call them homeless, whatever name you have for them. But there is a very large community of people out there who don't have a place to call home per se. Did you want to tell us then a little bit about the principle behind your charity?
Yep. So we're a social enterprise. We were set up, we set ourselves up in, when I say we, I mean me and my husband, Varun. So we got engaged in 2018 and we felt really, really grateful. So we thought we wanted to start a project together. And at that time, there was a lot in the news about people like living on the streets. We were from London, so we see it quite a lot. We both work in London, we live in London. And so we were like, okay, let's do something about it. Like, whatever we can, these things start with little steps anyway. By that point, we thought, okay, let's do it in a different way, because sometimes there is donator fatigue if we were just to go out there and start another charity and say, oh, we're donating to this, we're donating to that. So we actually started an organization which uses the buy one, give one model, which means that we have an online shop of, very basic items broadly. And it's just things that people that are unhoused need. And so if somebody purchases one, we donate the equivalent to one of our partner shelter homes that we work quite closely with over the last few years. So yeah, so that's kind of what we do. We're still going. It's been that's like 5 years now coming up to. So yeah, so I was telling you earlier, we're very, very busy in the winter months, quite naturally, because of the cold, people feel more giving. I think it's also the Christmas spirit kicks in. So people think a lot more about sort of charity and donation and those that don't have a shelter or don't have a home, during those months where people spend a lot of time in the warmth and with their families. So we're very, very busy from sort of October to February. And then as the sun comes out, we sort of tail off a little bit, which has been really eye-opening, especially the first year we did it, we were involved, because we were like, and then all of a sudden, the second year it started again, the same sort of trends in human nature. But yeah, it could be like to do with the media as well, The media do report every year on actually, and you will note it in some shape or form, usually in the newspaper articles, papers will cover it at some point in the winter about, these are the people that are sort of on the street, these are the figures, how is the homelessness crisis going, has it improved from last year, has it deteriorated more? So there is some reporting, so maybe it comes to like people's forefront a lot more where they feel they want to do something about it.
Did you think that first summer or the first spring when the sales dropped off, did you think this isn't working? This isn't going to work?
Yeah, because we were just, obviously when we got involved in it and we started unhoused.org, we didn't know, it's a passion project. We do it outside of our day jobs, as people say. I'm an accountant, my husband's, CEO of his own business, tech business. So it was just something for us that, we wanted to give back to the community, especially because London is our community. So we're from a city. I mean, we don't just obviously ship around to London and our shop's open to everyone. But the partner, our partner shelters there, they're London based because that's just where we're from. So it's easier for us logistically. So yeah, so we didn't really know what to expect. So we were like, okay, maybe it didn't really work. Maybe we got a, like, you know, we did actually get quite a bit of media attention as well that first summer because it was something quite different. And sorry, that winter. And then because it was something quite different. So we thought, okay, maybe it's just, you know, that we've kind of, you know, done the wave, we've ridden the wave and now it's over. So, well, let's just see how it goes. And we were getting married that summer anyway. So we were just like, okay, fine.
So we, quite handy.
And then we got back from our honeymoon and the sale started again, you know, like in the winter, in October. So there you go. So it wasn't that. It was, we were on social media. We're not like ridiculously active on social media either, but we're doing, like, we probably definitely should post more, you know. And but yeah, it's just trends in human beings, I think, that we learned a lot.
Does that surprise you, Dave, then, when you hear that? Because it really surprised me that something like that would be more popular in the winter, or maybe it's because I haven't thought about it, than it is in the summer.
It surprised me in the sense that I'd not heard it before, but as you just said, I'd never thought about it. But the moment you think about it, you just don't, it's almost not a problem in the summer, when clearly it is. You know, you don't just not have somewhere to live when it's cold. But it is always in the media more, far more in the winter. And I guess because there's two levels of suffering, I guess. The fact you don't have a home, you perhaps don't have friends or family around you, you might not have the right nutrition, you might not have the right access to, you know, healthcare or just basic sanitation. Those are persistent. But compared to winter, when it's actually really, really cold, that has to be, a many degrees more difficult, I guess. And that's why the media draws attention onto it, because that's what the media does. It's for them because it's headlines. They're not doing it for the people that don't have homes. They're doing it for their own reason, for clickbait on the internet or to sell papers. So it surprised me because I've never thought about it, but the moment you think about it for like a second, it's obvious, isn't it?
It makes sense.
Yeah.
It does, but it's shocking. So anyway, it's a buy one, gift one concept, which is a great concept. It's not one I don't think I've come across before, if I'm really, really honest. Mm-hmm. But you do have some fairly interesting products as well in your shop, including your hoodie. Did you want us to tell us about that?
Yes. So the hoodie we just started off in year one, just as a, you know, like quite basic essential items. So you've got underwear, you've got, you know, even shirts and trousers if somebody has an interview, job interview, you know, and joggers and things like that. So then we thought, okay, as I mentioned, my husband's into technology, so that's his background. So we were thinking, okay, how could we use technology to make this more and make this sustainable as well? So we thought, okay, how about having an item that actually stays clean? And we didn't know how we were going to go about it, to be honest. And then we sort of came across this technology that already existed, to be fair, of where it's like self-cleaning technology. But essentially what it does is it repels liquids, so water, for example, off clothing. So we thought, okay, well, it'd be great to have an item that's warm, you know, keeps everyone warm, long lasting. So yeah, we developed our self-cleaning hoodie, which I'm wearing today. And it's called our Hope hoodie. So I don't know if you can see that, the Hope there in the corner. Mm. So actually, if I was to drop water on it, it would just come off. And it just sort of flicks off, which is pretty amazing. And so yeah, so we developed that and it's been insanely popular. We've sold out of it quite a few times over the years. We've got some new stock in now, plug. So yeah, so if anybody wants to order, but yeah, it's been really, really popular, I think, amongst customers, because it's actually a really cool item. It's pretty fashionable as well, and then obviously the shelters have absolutely loved it as a donation.
Yeah, I'd seen it earlier because I do slightly more research than Gaz, who isn't he? but not much more.
I could have said anything.
I did see it online. I did see the self cleaning, and I was gonna raise it, but I do like the way it's just got that single word hope, because that just says it's so emotive and it just says so much.
Yes, I hope.
So I've got two teenagers, so they might be quite good for them, to be honest.
Yes. they just stay clean. So that if you just want to, you know, keep the teenagers clean, basically.
Buy them a couple of hoodies, buy them a hoodie each. Do you make all of your money from the shop, or do you have donations or other fundraising as well?
Yeah, so we just use the shop, and you can donate only on the shop as well. So not everybody decides to buy one for themselves. You know, we've got like different options. So you can either just buy single items and you can just decide to donate only, or you can literally donate the whole shop or half the shop, whereas it's different items. So you've got like sanitary items in there as well as clothing. So people just do what suits them. You know, we don't really make any money on it. Like, it's, you know, very small margins. But the price usually does include two items.
Mm. I was about to say, so yeah. Presumably that the retail cost that we'd be buying it for is...
You buy two. So you are giving it, and you're pretty much giving it.
It's all of the margin, and the price is a little higher than it otherwise would be. And that just about covers the two plus your running costs, I guess. Makes sense. Which is a great way of doing it, isn't it? Because
you know it's going somewhere. We also send, you know, well, once we've done the donation, which we wait for quite a sizable order, so sizable like amount, so quite a few orders, so that we can go with quite a like sizable donation to the shelters, so that they find it more useful, because then they can actually divvy it out amongst more people that are staying there. We send a video to whoever like is on our mailing list. So once we do that, we try and take photos and send a video and say, this is where your donation ended up. So people actually see where their money's gone, which is another thing, you know, because there's lots of charities, but sometimes people feel, like I said before, like a little bit of fatigue with donator fatigue, because they don't always see where that money goes. I mean, this is just me and my husband doing it. So the money is literally going into the donations. And we just share a video once we've done it. And and people are quite satisfied with that. We've had like really lovely feedback. Even when we did the most recent one at Christmas, this lady, she purchased something, but she purchased the item for her father, and then obviously we donated one, and then it actually got stolen at Christmas time, her father's. So once it got delivered, and so she contacted us, she's like, oh, can I have the tracking number? And we're like, oh, it says delivered. Like, we did it. I personally called like Royal Mail and tried to, you know, find out what happened, but clearly someone took it because it was signed for and everything. But the moment I sent her the video of the donation, she just put another donation through, like another order, and just donation only, because she just felt so satisfied. Even though her father didn't unfortunately get his present at Christmas, she was so, I think, touched by what she had done, her impact on the community.
And I think that there's two sides to that, isn't there? Because when you say for fatigue, it's you can, when you're being asked constantly, and by constantly sounds probably worse than it is, but if you were at least open to it, there's always an email coming through or a phone call you're not answering, or somebody at work's running a marathon or something. But so the fact that you're getting something, I know you're buying it, but you're getting something. But that second part is the other concern that a lot of people have in giving to large charities. You don't know what's happening with the money. You don't know whether it is ending up, you know, almost the point. I think people you would love to think that your £50 is ending up helping somebody, but it's not actually just paying the electricity bill for the head office or the CEO's salary. Although the CEO is a very important person to run a charity, of course, it's a business ultimately, even if it's a not-for-profit. But to have it go right to that end person is so much more, I was going to say rewarding, but some people do give for self-gratification and self-reward, and that's nothing wrong with that. But either way, you know, to have that sense of it's gone somewhere. But also with homeless people, the other side is there's always that fear that if they're in the street and you give them money, you can't help but think, is that going to go for some warm clothing, a room for the night, some food, or is it going to go on drugs, would be the worst case, or even people might think cigarettes or alcohol. You know, which you think, I wouldn't want that to go there, even if that might be their only comfort. Whereas this avoids both of those issues in one go.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And I think that's why people have supported us, because we were only just a startup little business, like in that sense, a social enterprise, just husband and wife running this as a project. And actually the fact that we're still getting donations through, we still get orders through, it's pretty amazing. So I think that message resonated with a lot of people. And also it's a new items, right? So I think that's what's also really sort of sets us apart a little bit is we're giving those less fortunate new items, brand new. It's not just secondhand or something that we've gone through our cupboard, we're clearing out. I mean, not to say anything against that. That's great to be doing that anyway. But yeah, like I think for them, when they see that the underwear that they've received, actually, that when we go to these shelters and homes, when we and actually have spoken to the residents there sometimes, and they actually see brand new underwear, like they're so excited. And it's such a basic item that, most people like you and I will take for granted because that's just what we use every single day. But for them, it's like, oh yes, I've got brand new underwear, So I think that's another thing it's worked out quite well. And I think, yeah, I think we didn't even know what the impact of that would be or how that would actually be received, but it's been pretty huge.
It must open your eyes to,
Yes.
even if you have an understanding of homeless people, because I don't know which part of London you're from, but my wife's from London, and you just know from the news that London, it's a city. Cities have the worst problems for homeless people. So even if you approach it with a fairly, I just want to help people, to you must learn so many things like that, which seems so small, and it's nothing you would ever think of yourself, but it's so significant to the person.
Exactly. No, exactly. And it was hugely eye-opening. I mean, we're based in East London, so yeah, a lot of our partners that we work with are sort of East based, just because, again, like I said, logistically. But there's a huge problem here, and there's not even enough shelters or housing for how many people require it. Which you speak to like a couple of our partners that we work with, they're telling us all the time, especially in this climate, funding's not great from local councils and grants. So they are really reliant on organizations like ourselves and people donating. So the fact that we're bringing in brand new things, they go like that from what we've heard. Like when we bring it in, just underwear and socks is a lot of the time what they want from what we've heard anyway. So they give us constant feedback. So again, like you said, it's very eye-opening because what we put on the website when we first started off, we've actually amended that a few times based on what they've told us and their feedback. They're like, oh, we don't need this, we keep the shirt on there, but they've said, yeah, if you gave us a shirt, that's fine, but people don't really care about that because they want the jumpers, they want the scarves, they want the hats, and just lots of underwear, just like and socks. There's been some recent feedback as well, which we're kind of looking into, which is mobile phones, actually, old mobile phones, just SIM only. They have a big demand for that as well.
Yeah,
yeah.
you
Can't
imagine.
get contracts
Yeah.
so.
It's funny enough though, when I looked through the shop and I looked through all the different products, there's things on there that probably I didn't think about. There was one actually which really jumped out at me, and that was the shirt. I thought, do you know what? It's a fantastic idea. At least
Yeah, it
people
was,
are going to use
yeah.
that shirt. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was because the idea was is that it would, if they were to go for an interview, they need something to wear. And they probably don't have a shirt, and people don't think about that. But yeah, I mean,
Yeah.
it is a good item. We do keep it on the sh in the shop for them, which is what I just said. But it's not the most desired item.
Wow, it's crazy. That's crazy. So when you look, you talk about London, obviously. We've got some figures that are scrolling across the bottom of the screen there for people who will watch this on the video when they watch it back, or if anybody is watching now, then they will see those figures there, and they are quite shocking. And actually, there's some really, really large numbers, but the one that really jumps out, obviously, is London. And London obviously has quite a large unhoused community, and it's somewhere estimated around about 160 odd thousand people is believed to be homeless in London. That is an incredible statistic, isn't it?
Yeah, incredible and quite sad actually. But it feeds into loads of things, like London housing is so expensive, cost of living is so expensive in London. So it sort of probably is, you know, there's various factors that sort of feed into that. You know, population is like is higher in London compared to other parts of the country as well. So, but yeah, I think it is shocking. And I think when you, you know, it's, you can walk on, literally on the way to work, you know, you get off a tube station, like I work in this in the city, and you get off at the tube station and you might just pass like a couple of people who are rough sleeping. And I think before this, you especially if you live in London, you put your blinkers on, you know, it's all about getting to and fro where you need to. So, and you will see those people sort of every day and you're like, you know, there might be days where you do give them money or you might give them a sandwich or you but otherwise it's sort of, you're just on your journey. So this sort of helps everybody, you know, take a step back and think, okay, what can I do to give back? And how do I make some small amount of impact that I know is actually going to help someone at the end of the day? Because it's exactly what you just said, Dave. Like sometimes you are worried, right? Like we've spoken to loads of people, even through the business, through this social enterprise. And like when we've been donating or when we've been talking about what we do, loads of people say that. They're like, I don't want to give money. I don't give money because I am so against giving money because I don't know what they're going to spend it on. I'd rather get them a sandwich from Tesco's and, you know, and give them some food. So I think this is gives them something tangible that they feel like people feel that they're actually giving and they're doing something really, really positive.
One of the other things I think that probably needs to happen as well, don't get me wrong, that is we Dave and I have had this conversation.
Yeah.
Is it something that is solvable? How do we solve it? It isn't something that just throwing money at it is not going to make it go away. A large part about it is education as well. And I take it back to, you know, when we were young and what we were taught in school. I know that was a long time ago, but let's not focus too much on that. But the thing is, you see, you know, it's the people, like you say, there's a large amount of people in London who are homeless. And you go to Manchester, Birmingham, and plenty of other cities around the world and around the country, and you will see it there as well. And those people never planned for that to happen. You know, I'm not even going to say use the phrase poor life choices, which I do hear used a lot. It's that lack of education. And I do think it needs to start there in terms of helping people to understand budget planning, you know, taxation, you know, just money management skills. Those things, I do think that needs to change. And I do think, I don't know, is that something that you look at, or do you obviously you're dealing with the problem that's there, that's facing you, that you see on the streets every single day. Is that something that you'd look at in terms of helping to educate? Is that somewhere else you could take it?
Yeah, and I think that's why we called it unhoused.org, because this can take any direction in the future. It can cover so many things. And I absolutely agree with you. I think we are not taught enough at school about actual like financial management. Like we have no idea. There's so many important things that we just don't learn. And I think in your teenage years, people, you know, teenagers don't like school largely. So it's just another subject. But actually you hope that even if you were taught it and you maybe weren't paying the most attention, something would stick. So that actually when you reach your 20s and you might be working and you actually have some idea of what it means to budget, what it means to, you know, plan ahead, savings accounts, investments, like unless you know about that, like I don't know, from your maybe even your family or you've decided to take an interest in it, you would have no idea. And so I'm 100% in agreement with, you know, there needs to definitely be more education. And we have looked at other things like such as opening potential like a bank account for the unhoused. It is a lot harder than even to get it off the ground, because if somebody had a bank account, again, like it's never too late to start financial education. So that is something that we definitely have looked into, will continue looking into. I know there are a couple of banks that do something similar. So yeah, it would be just about like maybe connecting them to our certain partners and, you know, actually under, and they need to be going to shelters as well to say, this is how you open one up. you know, like they need to be on the ground, like actually educating as well. Like, I think it's also, if a bank is going to open, if they are going to allow accounts for those people, they also have a responsibility to educate, you know, knowing where people have kind of ended up, or, you know, especially if they're going to try and better their lives in some way. So, yeah, so that's something that we think is really, really key, which is that sort of tech, financial education / management piece. That is something that is in the pipeline, but it's just not easy. It's just not easy, because the fundamental, like, principles of starting an account require you to have, like, an address, you know, and some sort of credit rating. And, you know, it's just so difficult to get off the ground.
But it shouldn't be that difficult, should it? Why, if you want to open a bank account that basically gives you an app access or a debit card that you can put in, so we're not even talking credit, we're just talking about money you've already got, and all it does is allow you to save money and take your own money back out, why do you need to have, I mean, I know why, because of money laundering and all the other rules and regulations, but why did those rules and regulations have to be so strict? Why can't someone just say, you know what, I get some benefits, and, well, maybe they can't because they don't have a bank account, but maybe they have just, they've sat on the street with a tin asking for money. And, you know, at the end of each day, maybe they've got enough to have a sandwich, have some water, and put £5 or £6 into a bank account. Well, if they were educated to do that and it was easy, you know what, in 6-12 months, they might have a few hundred quid in there. And that could be the difference to starting a different route in their life. But at the moment, there's just no option. And if there are banks that do offer these accounts, they're probably saying it for the PR, because, as you said, Anisha, they're not walking around the streets saying, do you know about this bank account? Yes. This is how it can help to change your life. This is what you need to do. This is how you access it. I've never heard banks doing that.
No. And I'm in a complete agreement with that point. And it's something that me and Varun have actually, you know, like I said, we've spoken to people about it. But it's not as accessible as, it's sort of, like you said, headline grabbing, but the actual reality of it is it's not that accessible. There's still some requirements. And actually, you know, why can we not just use the address of a shelter? It's essentially a savings account, right? It's a current account of cash that they've received. So, I agree. I think more needs to be done. I mean, it becomes like a political thing. It's like, how much can, you know, the government do? How much can, you know, the Mayor of London do, and all these things? But I think essentially it does come to, like, big organizations like the banks to, if they've started something, to actually, they've got the money, they've got the funding to follow through with that.
Yeah, I do think these larger institutions, don't get me wrong, I'm not going to slate them, because we're all part of a capitalist country. We all know it works. We all sign up to it, don't we? But I do think they do have that duty of care, that there are a number of people out there who probably need our help. And that's the thing. They need us probably more than they need them. And that's the biggest challenge, isn't it? Yeah. Just getting people like yourself, who've set this up, you know. And then that's the interesting thing about this. You know, you set up a business that you could have done for yourself to make a profit for yourself, that many people do as a side hustle or as a project just for fun. But, you know, I've got the utmost respect for you for doing that. I'd be interested to know, what was it in yourselves that really saw this problem and decided that you could make a difference and you could act on it?
Yeah, I mean, we both come from quite selfless service backgrounds. So I think that was the first thing. So both our, like, backgrounds are very community focused. Our families are very much into sort of community-based projects, always have been. So we both were doing things separately, actually. That's what was so funny. We were both part of, like, other organizations and involved with loads of initiatives very separately. So I think it was just us sitting down and saying, oh, we want to do something together, because we actually have this in common. We enjoy doing things for the community. We enjoy, you know, charitable work and actually just, you know, rolling our sleeves up and giving back. So I think it just happened that we both were passionate anyway about, I mean, about, you know, the homeless sort of problem in the UK. And it was just in the media a lot. I actually think that's just how it started. And we were like, this is it. This is something we're both passionate about, because we had to find that, because we were both involved in different initiatives. And actually, this is something we probably can impact, because through our network, we knew a few organisations and the shelters already. So we did have some connections there. So actually, it wasn't that difficult to get off the ground. And so, yeah, that's just it. That's just how it started. And then I think after year one, when we saw the impact and actually how what it felt like, without making it all about self-gratification, but just how rewarding it was when you go there and you hand over new items, it sort of stuck, and that's it. That's how we got into this. But I don't think it was it wasn't like this big plan for years and years. It was just sort of there in front of us, and we were just in the right place at the right time, I think.
No, fair play, because it's one of those things, like I say, we can talk about, you know, the larger companies doing that, and it'd be fantastic if they did. But there are other people, like I say, who do get involved as well. So have you had any dealings with the Big Issue at all?
We have. So we've worked with them. They were actually selling our hoodie at one point. So we were involved with quite early on. And so, yeah, we have connections with them and links with them as well. So, yeah, I mean, because where they, you know, their reach is so wide. So they contacted us, I think, quite early on from memory, and sort of, you know, said, like, how can we partner? So, you know, we definitely were featured in the Big Issue a few years ago. And then, they were actually marketing our hoodie as well. So,
oh, that's fantastic. That is fantastic. Yeah, I wonder if that's. That was going to be my line of question. I wonder if there's some way you could partner with them in terms of selling through them as well, and having those guys maybe promote your stuff, and if maybe their sellers could get, you know, I don't know, get a little bit of a cut on it as well. I don't know if that would be a way to go.
Yeah, that's how it works, isn't it? Yeah, and so it does like work like that. The arrangements with them. Because, you know, that's how they give back, is that the people on the street that you see selling the Big Issue, you know, are themselves unhoused in most cases and actually part of the organisation. So, you know, lots of respect for them and what they're doing.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So, so when you say you work with shelters, how many different shelters do you work with then?
So over the course of the last 5 years, we've worked with about 5, I want to say now, all dotted around East London. And then sometimes we get a request specifically from, we're not closed off or anything. If somebody sends us, get loads of emails. So if somebody sends us a request of something, like we had that last Christmas, we just say, okay, yeah, sure, we'll donate to you guys this time. It's just, like I said, it's just sort of the way we picked it, there wasn't any kind of algorithm or anything, like there was no science to it. It was, we kind of know some people working with these organizations already, or they're just very close to home. So, it's easy to get to a back and forth. We already have a relationship with them or something. But no, we've had loads of independents also reach out to us where we'll go and donate to them too. Mm-hmm. But yeah, largely London based, because we have to be able to get there as well.
Yeah. So how many people do these shelters deal with? Do you have any idea of the size of the problem or the size of the numbers that you're helping?
Yeah, so we've definitely donated now. Our counter must be up like nearly 20,000 items, I think, over the last 5 years, I would want to say. So, yeah, I mean, they've been divvied up across, like, everywhere. So, you know, so yeah, I wouldn't know necessarily, like, actually individually how many people that's impacted, but that's to give a sort of a broad idea of like how many items we've actually managed to donate over the last 5 years.
And obviously at the moment, the one thing that we're all aware of, those of us who are lucky enough to have a roof over our heads, is that the cost of living has risen significantly recently. The cost of, you know, gas, electricity, and just, you know, interest rates on your mortgage they're not showing any sign of coming down. Council rate, council tax, sorry, is going up, and all the rates you pay on everything is going up. So we know that it's a challenging time for people. Is that the feedback that you get from these shelters that you work in? Are they seeing larger numbers?
Yes, they're very overcrowded. And we've worked with some amazing people over the years, and people who, again, are doing some incredible things, like who work with these shelters and really care about the individuals in their community. And because they have, you know, regulars, people that come all the time and stay there. And actually, the feedback has definitely been that. So some of the shelters that we work with, they also run soup kitchens as well. So they've talked about how the numbers have increased phenomenally over the last few years. And they've said, like, they're just really, now they've got like so many more people coming through the door. Unfortunately, it seems to be a problem that's definitely like almost increasing because, like you said, of the cost of living crisis. And also just people who need food and items, who just feel like they need help. And I'm sure that's, for a lot of people, a really, really difficult and emotional decision to make, you know, especially if you've, say, been in a position that was more fortunate previously where you could afford food and, you know, basic item and shelter and all of those things, and then all of a sudden you're in a position where you no longer can. I can only imagine that being super, super difficult. So, you know, they're all gonna, like, the plate, these shelters or homes or like housing associations, whatever we want to call them, they're doing some incredible work where they're very sensitive as well to new people sort of walking in and taking them in. But their resources are also limited. They're very, very reliant on, they do get funding from the councils, but they're very, very reliant on, you know, individual funding and individual donations as well.
Yeah.
And volunteers, you know, just to help in the soup kitchen and just to help divvy out items that people get donated and things like that.
It's something that never fails to shock me, to be honest with you. When you look at the news, there's a great deal of wealth in this country. And the fact that we are thought of as one of the richest nations on earth, that we can have such a large problem like this. And the same in the States, again, you know what I mean? Seeing as a very, very wealthy nation, there's a huge homeless problem there, you know, especially in like the metropolises of Los Angeles and New York. It's a massive, massive problem. And it's something that I struggle to get my head around, that there can be that much wealth and that much poverty. You know, that in terms of without the risk of sounding like a real communist or socialist or whatever you want to call me, I don't mind, that it can't be shared out a little bit more fairly really, really bothers me a little bit.
But, yeah. And I think it's when you see the disparity up close, you know, and I think London is, you know, just, I keep using London as an example because that's where we live. But I think that it's really clear that there is this disparity still, because you've got this, you know, this huge problem for the unhoused community, which, you know, you're showing the figures at the bottom of the screen, but then the amount of wealth as well. You know, you just have to walk through Mayfair and you'll see that. So yeah, we are in a time when there is this real difference, and I think that gap is, unfortunately, over the last couple of years just widened that much more, because, you know, I mean, certain things are probably out of the control of just in certain individuals, you know, like gas prices and things like that. There's other factors feeding in, global factors, which feeding into that. But yeah, like, you might be able to understand that sort of on a macro level, but if that's impacting your pocket to the point where you can't buy food or you can't pay your council tax and your bills, so, you know, you lose the roof over your head, that's a very different story.
And obviously, we don't like talking about it. Nobody likes talking about it. We like to push it behind us, pretend it never happened. But there has been a period of time in the very early 2020s when we had a bit of a pandemic.
Yeah.
What impact did you see then?
Oh, that was huge for us, because we weren't allowed to. So we were getting loads of donations, actually, because the pandemic's, well, in this country's lockdown started in March. So we'd just come out of our really busy season. I call it busy season. It shouldn't really, like, this crisis is not like seasonal, unfortunately, but it's sort of just how it sort of works from a donation perspective. So we actually had loads of items to donate, but we weren't allowed to go to the shelters and donate them. So we were sat on, we'd done the shop. So we were sat on all these items, pretty much, you know, like in the house, and we couldn't do anything. But then when we were, you know, when things started, there was that period when it eased a little bit in between before everything got locked off again. I think it was like in towards the end of 2020, we were able to get those items out. So, and actually again, donations went quite high because people were then again feeling sympathetic for those less fortunate than them. I think the pandemic was definitely an eye opener for most people about, well, being grateful for everything that you have, even as simple things, you know, because it was a very, very difficult time, you know, for the world, not just even this country or not just London. I'm talking about like for everybody globally. So it brought a sense of community for a lot of people. So yeah, so it was quite difficult, but they said they really struggled when we were talking to them and we were making the donations. A lot of shelters and soup kitchens and homes, they said that it was very hard because at that point they couldn't take in anyone new, or there was a lot of there were a lot of restrictions for certain people because it was just a time of restrictions, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So it was tough.
Yeah, I can imagine.
I think there were less people on the street from what I remember, because I think there were more efforts to get those people housed though, like because it was the pandemic, local governments were doing a bit more to give shelters though to those that were rough sleeping because they didn't want them necessarily because it was a pandemic. So again, it's because it was front page news. I think a bit more was done centrally. So yeah.
It's a statistic that I have heard in terms of more people were housed during that time and there were less people on the street, and it just seems utterly bizarre. Let's solve the problem now because we can't have these people coughing on somebody, heaven forbid.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it's no longer a problem, go on, out you go. Don't you think that is such a strange set of circumstances?
It is. So I do remember that. So I think there was more housing provided because of the state of everything, the way the pandemic was impacting everybody. So there was probably more housing actually then for those that were unhoused. But yeah, the problem still exists. It's continued, and you know, the cost of living crisis just hasn't made it any easier. Those, you know, there's, like I said, there's great organisations local to everybody, you know, because they're all over the country, these shelters, these homes. They need support and they need help. But again, it is hard because that cost of living crisis is impacting everyone. So actually, we did notice that this Christmas, this winter, our sales weren't as high as they normally are. And we did put that down to cost of living because energy prices was so high. So again, your like disposable income and how far that's taking you in a month, even for those that, you know, aren't in the worst position, but they're still in a worse off position than they were probably a year ago. So they have less to give. Which is a shame, but that's human nature, and everyone's, you know, completely entitled to make sure they look after their own homes first, right? Like you just go your weekly Tesco shop. Everybody knows how much that's increased, right? Like same items from a year ago, and you know how much that increase is. Now that's coming out of pockets where maybe salaries haven't gone up in line with cost of food, you know, or bread, even like the price of bread. Like I think I've seen a few articles on how much bread's increased over 1 year across all the supermarkets, and you know, salaries just haven't gone up in that level. So people don't have the same amount of money to also donate, which means we've had less orders and less donations, which means we've given probably less. I mean, it was still decent. I have to give it to the community around here in the UK. People still are very, very, very giving, but just, you know, we definitely saw a drop in numbers, which we can put to the cost of living crisis. which is completely understandable.
Yeah, it is. Dave, I'm in danger of getting political here. Did you
him with a question? Let's not steer me away from this.
No, don't let me go down that route, Dave. So in terms of this, is it something then, obviously you're dealing, and it's great that you deal with places outside of London as well. Is this something, a model that, not necessarily franchisable, but could it be replicated in other cities, do you think? And would you, is it something you'd like to see done?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and we'd love to hear from other people as well, like where, you know, you can use our shop, like that's fine because we can pretty much ship anywhere. But it, you know, if somebody wanted to start something similar locally, like it's something that we're all for, really, because this isn't just a London problem. It's just that we happen to live in London. So it's something that we can tangibly impact and try and help. But, you know, this problem exists everywhere. It's globally, but definitely other cities in the UK, you know, up north, in the Midlands, you know, Northern Ireland, Ireland, Wales, Scotland. I'm sure it exists everywhere. And actually, if people started models like this, or it would impact their local communities really well and positively. So, yeah, so we're welcome. If anybody wants to get in touch, we're, you know, more than welcome to reach out to us via email, or not. You can do that via our website, and we can have a chat.
Going to ask what Adam just asked about scalability and about how far you could take it. And I didn't catch all of Adam's questions, so it may have been the same thing in terms of advertising. You say you don't use social media probably as much as you should. But I'd not heard of it before, so you know, but that I don't use social media a lot anyway, so that's probably not probably explains it. But it's such a great concept. I mean, have you had plans in terms of a marketing strategy, or does that then come back to funds? And if you use funds for that, then it's funds not going to help people.
Exactly. So it sort of leads on, it's sort of similar to what Adam just asked. But you know, we completely recognise that this is a problem that's not just within London, it's within the wider UK, but then it's also global. So we definitely have thought about, you know, scaling this up and, you know, impacting in other ways. And also, like, because it's what I was referring to earlier, the name is so wide, we could do anything. We can literally do anything. It doesn't just sort of stop here. It's just, yeah, we're reliant on like donations and our own, you know, time as well, because we're doing this outside, you know, of the day job, which I keep referring to. And so sort of we've kept it quite small-ish around London focus for now, but we definitely have plans. But if anybody wants to get in touch of how we could partner with them, we're very open to that, you know, in comms. And you know, we've had someone actually just a couple of days ago reach out and say they think they want to do something from the US, saying, oh, I've seen what you do, you know, would like to think, do something similar, or want to definitely impact sort of that homeless crisis, because the US also have a huge issue over there, you know, like, just can we have a chat? So I think we're having a call next week on that. So yeah, so we're always open to ideas of how this could scale. And we've definitely had conversations about it. It's just resources are limited. So all in good time.
I guess there's a tipping point, isn't there, that you know that if you push it too much, it all of a sudden becomes a bit too consuming. And then you've got to decide, is it job or is it unhoused? Yes. And they're big decisions to make for lots of reasons, because you may actually really love your job and want to do your job.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's not just about, is it going to be financially supportive, because you've still got to earn a living, but is it taking away from your other passions or the things you want to do?
I can
imagine that being quite a dilemma.
It's that. And I guess we don't really have a team at the moment. It's, you know, it's completely me and him doing it, you know. We are the ones that we post orders. We do it like ourselves, you know. I'm in the queue at the post office at 5 o'clock, 4:30. We're in the massive queue before they take the last, you know, orders and the last delivery, because the orders need to go out. So yeah, it's very much very startup focused. I love it. We absolutely love it. Or, you know, because it's quite nice to do things personally as well. But yeah, it's all of those things that it's about how much time we give it. And we do have plans, and I think it might be something that happens when things settle a bit more in the market and in the finance, like in terms of the economy as well, because we are very reliant on people giving. But yeah, it's, well, I guess we'll have to see how we grow over the next few years.
Yeah, indeed. And yeah, it's interesting. I'll be interested in how much time you actually spend on it, on actually doing all the stuff, because it sounds to me like you might have two jobs right now.
Yes, yeah. No, and when it's, like I said, in the winter, it definitely feels like that. Like, the, you know, the orders come through and, you know, and you're relying on, I think this year there were the strikes as well, right? The Royal Mail post strikes. So we were dealing with that. At one point they stopped overseas deliveries. So we were caught up in that as well. So we had to process a few refunds there actually, just because we just couldn't post the hoodie anywhere in the world because, you know, the Royal Mail were striking. So yeah, so we do spend quite a bit of time, but it's giving back. Like I said, we both come from that background actually, so it hasn't felt like that, but definitely during the winter it's two jobs.
yeah, so it certainly sounds like that. So when you first started this up then, did you have a goal that you wanted to achieve with it, and did you have some lofty targets that you wanted to hit, or was it just taking it and seeing where it went?
I think it was more taking it and seeing where it went, because we just had no idea. Like, you know, we just wanted to do something, which I keep going back to. So I just think we sort of just went in there, you know, like really grateful for the love we were receiving and wanted to give back. And we're like, let's just see how this goes. And we were, I think, quite overwhelmed by the reception, to be honest. And then when we were like, okay, let's take this up a notch. And then when we launched the hoodie, that was a really big deal as well. So again, we were like super, super overwhelmed. I didn't think it would, I wasn't sure if it would last this long, to be honest. I was like, oh, let's just see how it goes, you know. But actually, we're still going. We're still being invited to lovely podcasts, you know, and talking to lovely people about what we do. So yeah, it's, I think it also shows how big the crisis is and how much of a sort of focal point this subject is for a lot of people. It's quite touching and emotional, right? So everyone probably thinks about it at some point in the year, maybe because of they've read an article or they've seen someone on the street or, you know, et cetera. So I think because it hits home with a lot of people, excuse the pun, it actually has meant that we're still going, you know?
Well, I certainly know it's something that bothers me. Dave and I have talked about it in the past. I think we've just discussed, you know, the solutions or the lack thereof of them before. And for me, I think it, same as yourself, it comes from a point of gratitude, you know, there. But for the grace of God, I don't face these problems. And if I can do just a little bit of something to make somebody's day a little bit easier, then I think I probably should do it. And do I do enough? Probably not, no. Yeah. But could I do a little bit more? Yes, I definitely could. But I think the more that people do and the more that people have opportunities out there put in front of them like yourself, like I say, such a great model to do it, you know, where you can buy yourself a hoodie and like I say, Dave, you know, you can get your kids when they're spilling their food down themselves. It doesn't matter so much. Certainly my kids spill food down other people, not just themselves. But I do think it's a great concept. I think it's a really, really great concept. And like I say, that they can actually see where it goes as well. And whether it's just inflating somebody's ego or not, just making them see that actually what they are doing is physically making a difference in somebody's life. I do think it's fantastic that you've put that out there for people. So well done. So what we need to do then, tell us a little bit about your website. Tell us where people can find it, the sort of other stuff that they'll see on there as well.
Yeah, so it's unhoused.org. So you literally put in unhoused.org into Google or your search bar, and we are the first ones to come up. So really proud of that. And you can see the projects, you can see the partners that we work with on the website, and you can see our shop. You can see our hoodie as well. Check that out because it is pretty amazing. You can find us on Instagram. We are getting better, so we've definitely been posting more over the last few months. So, yeah. Definitely got better on that. And so we are on TikTok, we as well. We're not as active on TikTok, but we're trying to become more active. So you can see us there, and Facebook as well. So we are on all channels, and we're just unhoused.org. So it's really, really easy to find us in terms of all of our handles as well. And you can just see what we do, check, take a look at the shop, see if you like anything, or if you just want to donate. And yeah, we'll send that out.
Fantastic, fantastic. Now, we are listened to in 57 different countries, the audio version anyway, which is thankfully vastly more popular than the video version, because goodness gracious, why would you want to look at me and Dave when you can just listen to Dave? What message would you like to give to our listeners then? The one thing that they should do or consider?
Yeah, so I think it's about taking maybe a step back and just thinking about what you could do in your own spare time. Like, even if it's just going on our website and, you know, ordering something, even that impacts somebody's life. So we would just like try to encourage that behavior, you know, think about the people that are like less well off than yourselves, because actually we're in a very lucky place, even though over the last few years it hasn't felt like it, but actually there's people that are a lot worse off. So yeah, and if you actually do want to start something locally, please do get in touch. We'd love to start a partnership or talk to you about it, and, you know, see how we can work together. Because we're also looking for like new ideas all the time as well. So
cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Dave, any final thoughts?
I think just it's very admirable what you do, and it's people like you that make an awful lot of difference where the powers that be don't for whatever reason, and it's people like you that fill that gap to a large extent, and I think that's pretty awesome. And ultimately, if loads of people just went to the website and bought some underpants, that's going to make a big difference to an awful lot of people, because by the sounds of it, that's the thing that they want the most. Yeah. and they get the biggest sort of, you know, smile from. I think people get a bad rap sometimes when they donate and they talk about donating. And Adam, I know you've mentioned before in previous podcasts that you do stuff you don't like talking about it, but I sometimes think that's wrong. Why can't you take some gratification out of helping somebody else and talk about it? I don't quite get what's wrong with that. If you're trying to, you know, gain listeners on Instagram through it, maybe that's a bit disingenuous. But just to talk about how you've donated and helped people, I don't get what's wrong with that. And if more people talked about what they did to help people rather than just thinking, I should just do it and not tell anyone because I'm doing it for them and not me. But if everyone talked about what little they did, then maybe think, you know what, I could also do that. And I could also buy some underpants, and maybe I'll buy some socks. And actually, by talking about what you have done, you might get more momentum and more people donating.
Great. Awesome. Yeah, because you empower others with your actions sometimes, I think, you know, to follow suit. And actually, they might decide to make an impact, or maybe they just hadn't thought about it. Because they were caught up in, everybody has problems in their lives, you know, like you get caught up in your day to day. So actually you might have just sparked something in their mind to take a step back and think about something on more of a macro level. So yeah, no, agreed.
Well, my final thought then for this is then, inspired by your comments. Like I have been on the website and I have purchased, and I'm glad to know and hear about the different things that people have been doing. Yeah, so I really it's been fascinating for me, and it's something that for whatever reason, like I say, I think it is just from my own gratitude for the life that I have, it resonates with me. For those that aren't as fortunate, like I say, anything that anybody can do to make it better is fantastic, and it's great that you probably did things before, but the fact that you've made it open for others to do that as well, I think is phenomenal. So I think both Dave and I take our hats off to you and say fair play and well done. We're really impressed with it. It's such a great thing. And you know, and just in terms of, like you say, you don't spend any money on marketing. The imagery that you use, that black, that white, and with the unhoused in the middle and the great big black background around it, it's fantastic. It's eye-catching, because that's what caught my attention the first time I saw it. It just jumped straight off the page. And so yeah, I do think you really are onto something, and I do hope that other people take it on board and take it out to other cities. And don't get me wrong, is it our problem to solve? No, it isn't. But if we can't solve it, then let's make it our problem and let's solve it.
Great, thank you.
No, it's just thank you is what we're saying. So if you'd like to say your goodbyes then to our listeners.
Yeah, so thank you so much for listening to me today. Yeah, like I said, please do get in touch if you have any ideas, or do visit our website, then we'd really, really appreciate that. And I know that the local community definitely would from any donations. So yeah, thanks so much and hope everybody has a lovely evening.
Thank you. Thank you, Dave.
Yeah, great to have you on, Anisha. Great work I think you're doing there. And hopefully you're going to load more orders from all of our listeners.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, I hope so too. So the video will be available in a couple of days' time, I think tomorrow afternoon at some point. And then the audio version, which is the version that is most popular. Like I say, we're in the top 10% of podcast for listeners globally. So hopefully a good portion of our UK listeners tune into this and do something about it. And normally I would send you in the way of our sponsors or in the way of our own website. But what I will do is I will send you in the way of your website instead and say head over to unhoused.org and go and buy something for somebody else and maybe get a little something for yourself. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me. Thank you.
My pleasure. Our pleasure.